Welcome to the Currency.News podcast. It pays to be curious.
Today we're going to talk about vulture funds, or one vulture fund in particular, Cerberus. Now, I don't know what it says about a company that it names itself after the three-headed dog that guards the gates of hell, but it certainly says something. Call it nonchalance, call it determinism, I don't know, but it certainly says something. Now, Thomas Hubert, you've been tracking Cerberus for many, many years. And we're going to talk in particular in a moment about how they've done in Ireland, how much money they made, how much they've invested and what sort of returns they've got. But I think it's worth contextualising this conversation because it's 12, 13 years ago since a small number of very large hedge funds and so-called vulture funds started buying up distressed Irish debt. And we're now coming to the business end where we're getting to see just how they've done. You might just talk us through that process. What's been going on?
Yeah, Ian, this is really an important date because, as you said, that 12-year mark means by the time accounts are in, we have a full decade of figures from those vulture funds. As you said, they came 2013, 2014. The bank guarantee was over. The bailout of the banks in Ireland was over. And they still had all those bad loans on their balance sheets. And the regulators were coming in saying, we don't want this crisis to happen again. You have to clean up your balance sheets, get rid of those bad loans. They're too heavy against your assets. And what they did was essentially sell them off. And who was buying?
Yeah, so we're talking NAMA, we're talking IBRC, we're talking Ulster Bank,
exactly.
And some residual assets from the main domestic banks. They had to get them off their balance sheets and they were sold to a very small number of funds. We're talking Cerberus, Carval, Apollo.
Yeah, exactly. And Cerberus was definitely one of the biggest, if not the biggest buyer of those loans in Ireland. They came in from the very start, end of 2013, beginning of 2014. And they are, I suppose, if you want to see, you know, who is Cerberus a bit, it's a New York investment firm. They have different kind of asset classes they invest in, but credit is their main one, and especially distressed debt. And of $65 billion they have under asset management, they say they have done about $28 billion worth of acquisitions. And we're going to see a lot of that came from or through Ireland.
So just put it into context, and you've been digging, and the reason we're doing this podcast is you've been digging into Cerberus over the last number of months, just to try and figure out and take one example of how one vulture fund, and I know they hate being called vulture fund, I think pretty much all of them do except Cerberus, who have clearly, as I said, you know, with that sort of nonchalance indifference to public perception. How big was Ireland within the context of Cerberus? You talked there about 65 billion euro of assets under management. How big a play did they make on the Irish market?
So if you look at everything they have bought via Irish subsidiaries, which is an important aspect of it, they have established and registered companies in Ireland to do those deals. In total, they've put over 17 billion euro into those Irish companies. They're not investing on their own. They're also getting banks to invest with them and provide debt backing for those deals. And of that, the majority, 10 billion euro, was actual Irish debt bought from the likes of NAMA and Irish banks.
So the other 7 billion, therefore, is that they use Irish entities, Irish SPVs or companies or Section 110, whatever you like, and there's a whole swath of them to buy foreign assets.
Exactly. And they've been doing that more and more. Really, the UK and Ireland were the first targets for those deals. And then they kept those structures that are ultimately based in Ireland. The company that actually buys the loans, whether they're in Ireland or in Spain or in Greece, wherever, is an Irish company. And that's where the initial profit is generated. And then that trickles up through the Netherlands, the Cayman Islands. They have a whole structure that we've covered before in the currency.
And they bought at, I don't want to say pennies in the dollar, but they certainly bought at steep discounts when they were buying in these debt.
Absolutely. I've never seen a deal by any vulture fund, and certainly not Cerberus, where they paid more than half of the money that was actually owed by the borrowers. But there's so much arrears on those debt that really the banks were happy to sell at half price or less than half price. There's some cases where I've seen, notably, I think Ulster Bank or NAMA sell at 90% discount.
Okay, so let's talk through it. Ireland is in deep financial trouble. I don't want to say a small number of large firms ride to the rescue, but certainly come in and take debts off the bank. banks, plural. Cerberus is one of the big players. What did it buy here?
So they bought mostly big loan books, and they are kind of bundles of loans, mortgages essentially, that NAMA and Ulster Bank initially were getting rid of, and they were in the hundreds of millions or billion euro scale. And as things moved on, they also, when they went elsewhere to Europe, they also invested directly in property vehicles, like real estate investment trusts in Spain especially. But really the biggest part of that big spending spree has been on big parcels of mortgages.
And what did he do with them? And I will come to the financial performance, because that's where we're building up to. That's the Everest of what we're looking at here. But just in terms of their modus operandi, that's a massive amount of money. And I know we've become desensitized to billions and large numbers, where even 13 billion euro of Apple feels somewhat insignificant these days because of the river of corporation tax gold. But it's still, you know, 17.3 billion invested in Ireland is still a pretty whopping sum of money. In my mind, I'm seeing, you know, a monumental office where they're in there basically taking the place of Bank of Ireland or AIB with significant infrastructure. Clearly, they don't have a branch network in the classical sense. What do they have here?
So here in Ireland, in terms of physical presence, there was nothing at the start. It was only brass plate companies. They were just in the files of secretarial companies here in Dublin. And then from 2019, they established a small office in Dublin. There was one person working there. Now they have nine, and it's called a servicing office. So it is essentially trying to recover as much debt as possible from those loan books they buy. But that legwork, as you mentioned, you know, collecting those mountains of debt, it has been outsourced, and they're going through servicing companies all over Europe to do that work for them. So it's actually essentially an asset management company.
Okay. And obviously that involves a lot of litigation and a lot of bespoke individual deals with individual clients.
Yeah, and there was a study I was looking at doing the series of articles we're publishing this week from 2020, studying that first wave by the Bank of International Settlements, looking at the Irish banking crisis, the first wave of deleveraging that the banks did. And the study found that mostly people who had a mortgage on their own home, they weren't typically sold to those vulture funds. There were arrangements made with the banks. So there wasn't that wave of repossessions of people's homes. And we've seen that didn't happen. But what the banks did is they offloaded all the bad commercial property loans, all the buy-to-lets, all those properties that the owners, the mortgage holders weren't living in. And then the vulture funds went after them. If you look at High Court records, those promontoria companies, which is the name of every subsidiary of Cerberus in Ireland, has the word promontoria in them. There's around 1,000 legal cases in the High Court since promontoria started in 2013 and against borrowers in Ireland. Another few hundred going the other way, where the borrowers have sued promontoria to defend themselves against their actions. So we can see it was quite fractious. And it is that dirty work that essentially the vulture funds have done instead of the banks who originated those loans.
Okay, and the reason we're looking at this is because, as you say, we're now coming to the business end of things. We're getting to have some class of visibility on how much money they've made, because they've worked their way through an awful lot of the debt, and they'll be moving on to the next country, potentially the United Kingdom. We don't know, but the next country that's in deep financial trouble. How has it performed, Thomas, based upon your analysis? And I know you've done quite a lot of analysis.
Yeah, we have all the figures in detail on the currency this week, but more in terms of the broad picture. We now have full sight of that first wave, 2014 to 2017, when really there was a fire sale of bad loans by the banks and NAMA. And we can see that those vehicles have finished working through those loans. Either they've recovered as much debt as they could from the borrowers, or they've sold it on to someone else. That happens as well. And it gives us a kind of a return of $9 billion worth of the 17 I've talked about. 9 billion is now over. We know how much they've done from it. And that returned 80% on the money Cerberus invested itself. It also returned more for the banks that were backing it, because Cerberus borrowed to buy those loans. So the banks, the Credit Suisse, the Deutsche Banks, Merrill Lynch and Morgan Stanley, who backed those deals, they got their chunk in terms of interest. But Cerberus itself has got an 80% return on this 9 billion that it invested via Ireland, whether in Irish or European debt.
It's quite a trick, isn't it?
Yeah, nearly doubling your money. I mean, it took years, so it's not like they got it instantly, but they also did pretty well because when you look at the cash flows from those companies, a lot of the borrowers who could be recouped by Cerberus, they did repay early enough. And they actually gave the money back, and that means Cerberus was able to get its investment back quite quickly, and that 80% return was actually trickled over several years, but the bulk of the money was already back in the bank for them.
It begs two questions, which I'll put to you very quickly. One, did the Irish banks, based upon that, should they have dealt with it themselves? Was there a financial case for doing that? And I know the IMF and the ECB actually in particular would argue otherwise. And two, were they sold too cheaply based upon the long-term value and based upon that 80% uptick that you spoke to?
Yeah, so 80% is actually through all the Irish SPVs. If we look solely at the Irish debt, you know, the ones that were borrowed by people in Ireland, north and south, and that was a lot of the Irish banks' business. So there was 5.3 billion euros worth that Cerberus invested in those specifically Irish loans, and they got 47% back on that. So not as good as elsewhere in Europe, especially Germany, where they got very lucrative deals. 47% return in Ireland. Can we say that was good or bad for the banks or for Cerberus? It's a matter of opinion. What they did was they helped the banks clean up their balance sheet, meet the new regulations that were coming in, forcing them to be more solvent. And there was a cost to that. They took on the risk of those loans, but they did make a serious profit. We could argue that the banks, if they had held on to those loans, they would have recovered 917 million. That's the price tag so far for that first wave, the 4 years of getting rid of all those bad loans, 2014 to 2017. That cost the Irish financial system, to Cerberus only, 917 million. That's what they've taken out of them. So pretty heavy price tag.
Yeah, and just flowing from that, were some deals for Cerberus better than others?
There were. And within Ireland, if you compare the two biggest providers of assets to Cerberus, they're really Ulster Bank and NAMA for the period where we have the full picture. And definitely, Ulster Bank was more profitable to Cerberus than NAMA. There was a big gap there. And if Ulster Bank had held on to its own loans, maybe it would have done better. NAMA actually gave a kind of 35% return to Cerberus on everything it sold it. So still, money the taxpayer could have got back.
Could have got back.
But we decided to give it to them and let them do the work.
And there were reasons for that. Just in terms of the tax situation, Thomas, it was the great conceit at the start of this process that, you know, we were so keen to have foreign buyers come in and buy distressed assets and distressed debt that we offered what I would call as a very sympathetic tax regime. Was there anything in this, any kicker in this for the taxpayer in the end?
There was a kind of damage limitation exercise. So Section 110 companies, as you mentioned earlier, are those vehicles established in Ireland that essentially do all their business through intercompany debt. Cerberus lends money from the Netherlands to the Irish company, and then the Irish company, any profit it makes, returns as debt repayment to the Netherlands. So there is no tax on that under the Section 110 regime. There was a limitation introduced in the budget in 2016 where you can't do that if the loans you're servicing are backed by Irish property. So the actual Irish mortgages, the buy-to-lets in Ireland, the commercial property, they had to actually pay tax on that, even if they were using Section 110 companies. And I've looked at some examples. There was definitely tax paid on the Irish-backed debt, but there was also some ways of lowering those tax bills, such as paying heavy fees to Cerberus entities in the Netherlands that didn't qualify as taxable income. So it was still under the 25% rate you would normally pay on profits from investment activities in Ireland.
Okie dokie. Just a broader contextualization, when you look at Cerberus and the other vulture funds, what is their legacy in Ireland? What have they done for Ireland, good, bad, indifferent, and at what price?
What they've done is really prevented kind of breaches of regulations by the banks and allowed them to clean up their balance sheet. What they have cause as trouble maybe is for borrowers to go aggressively after their debt in a way that banks have not done. We've seen some litigation by banks. Obviously, when people don't repay their debt, they're in trouble, but definitely more aggressive by some of the vulture funds. And they've been able to do that because they're not really based in Ireland. They don't have a reputation here. They don't mind. They don't have customers that will pull their their checking account out of the bank if they're unhappy and if they have a bad reputation.
And they don't care if they get calls from the local parliamentarian.
Exactly. And that's been the outsourcing aspect of that. The price for Ireland will go into well over a billion. I've mentioned 917 billion so far that Cerberus has made on Irish debt specifically. It will be more than that. They have a lot more to work through because some of the banks, especially the ones that got state bailouts like Bank of Ireland, AIB, they didn't go to vulture funds straight away. But as the regulations tightened and as they, after trying, they couldn't cut some deals with some borrowers, from 2018, there was a second wave of the really bad loans from the pillar banks again going to vulture funds like Cerberus. And that part we'll have to come back to in the future because we don't yet know exactly how it did.
Well, with that future piece, what happens next, Thomas?
Next is probably some permanent presence from those companies in Ireland. We've seen Cerberus, as I said, have now a 9-person office here out of 65 people who work on non-performing loans in the world. So it's not a small part of their business. And there will be more crises. The uncertainty we can see in the global economy at the moment means there will be places in the world where bad debt is up for sale. And they've now established strong structures to do that through Ireland, and they will keep doing it through Ireland. So the idea now is, do we want to keep a closer eye on this, regulate it? It is actually fairly transparent. I had no trouble getting the figures, bar a few examples in early days when the reporting was not as detailed as it is today. Is Ireland a good or a bad place to do that? That's a matter of opinion, but at least it's out in the open and we can see what's going on.
Finally, I mean, look, as I said, the numbers are pretty stark. 11.7 billion with 1,000 pieces of litigation and 80% uplift. You've been going through it, not just the last couple of weeks in relation to this investigation, but tracking it for a number of years. What are your reflections upon it, upon when you sit down to talk to people about it, Thomas?
I think it could be more transparent again. Like, there is no difficulty seeing the figures as I've done, but for the borrowers themselves, it is a black box. And what you see, especially through those cases of litigation we've mentioned in the courts, a lot of the complaints from the borrowers, and they use that in their counter arguments against the vulture funds coming after their debt, is that there is no clarity in what's happening. Who owns their debt? When does it change? Who is servicing it? And maybe there is a piece there to introduce a more transparent system for the borrower itself. Do you know when you're borrowing from a bank that the bank actually has the right to sell your loan? That's never told. Do you know who actually buys the loan and when and what happens next? It seems to have been very unclear in a lot of cases. So definitely regulation can progress on that. But at the same time, this is not a business that's going away, and I think we'll see it again in the future.
An opaqueness behind a very profitable brass plate. Thomas Hubert, thank you very much.
You've been listening to the Currency.News podcast. It pays to be curious.